It's time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cyclists, trails, travel, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast at OutspokenCyclist.com or through your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for October 16th, 2021. I originally had two conversations for you this week, but I think after you hear my first guest, you're going to need to chill out for a bit. When you look up the word entrepreneur in the dictionary, it would not surprise me if Jared Fisher's face is what you saw. Riding, performing, and producing BMX trick events from the time he was 10 until he was 27, Jared Fisher is now the owner of multiple bike shops, a 30-year-old touring company that specializes in mountain bike and multi-sport tours, and has his sights on the governorship of Nevada. Oh, there's also the new Aquarius Trail, a project Jared had on his bucket list for many years and that came to fruition late last summer. Wait till you hear about that. His energy is palpable and contagious, and our conversation covers the gamut. At 51, he has accomplished so much, and yet he has so much more he wants to do. Hi, Jared. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Where are you?
I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, a little town outside of Vegas.
Yeah. Is it hot?
Actually, I'm looking outside right now and the leaves are starting to fall off the trees. It's not hot. It's definitely cooling up.
Well, it's 80 here and we're in Cleveland and it should be 50. So who knows what's going on? Anyway, yeah. Let's talk about you and all the things that you do. I don't even know where to start, but I guess we'll start at the beginning. So where did you grow up and how did bicycles become your passion?
I was born in Ojai, California, but not too long thereafter moved to Chico and then ended up on the East Coast when I was 10. And I've always enjoyed riding bicycles as a little kid, put together my own bikes with little parts here and there. And when I turned 10, I just got the niche for BMX riding, just moved to a little town called Wethersfield, Connecticut with my mom. And lived in a colonial neighborhood and found it extremely boring. And the only thing that I could find an escape from that was my bicycle. So I really got into BMX riding and I found myself very independent at the time. And so I got into trick bike riding instead of like BMX racing. I'd started with BMX racing, but I found that it was too much of a hassle to go to the racetrack and stuff. And I could just do BMX tricks in my backyard. So I got really heavily into BMX freestyle between 10 and 27, 28 years old. And when I was in high school, I started a BMX trick bike riding team and really just enjoyed, loved doing that. Ended up when I graduated high school, I was doing shows here and there around the East Coast and then ended up in Las Vegas for college. And when I got to Las Vegas, I started another BMX freestyle team called the City Streets Pro Freestyle Team. And we started doing gigs kind of all over the place. And that was really what I loved doing was freestyle BMX shows. I quickly realized that BMX riding was not going to be a sustainable career. And because you would always crash and I'd be hurt all the time. And that was that. So I got into mountain biking and I somehow broke both my kneecaps mountain biking when my first couple of years of mountain biking, but got through that. And when I was in college, when I had my BMX team, I put together a mountain bike touring business through a hotel marketing class that I was taking my senior year. And I turned it into a real business. And so that's how I got into the bicycle industry. I've always been an entrepreneur. So I've always loved to tinker with things and figure things out and do things on my own and come up with solutions and innovate. And so that's kind of how our company, kind of Escape Adventures, kind of formed over the years. And we have a lot of different fingers going in a lot of different directions for in the bike industry, except for manufacturing. We're not into that, but we're into retail and bicycle touring and adventure travel. We even built a new hut system through the Southern Utah Dixie National Forest. So that's kind of my background, how it all kind of started.
Yeah, I want to catch up on a couple of those things. Let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Jared Fisher. He and his wife, is it Heather?
Mm-hmm.
Own Heather. Escape Adventures and a lot more. So I know that you're in the retail business, which is my background since the 70s. Did not race bikes, did not crash a lot, did not get hurt on a bike, did get hurt on a pair of roller skates once. But yeah, right. Stupid me. Fell over, broke my wrist. But that's beside the point. So let's talk about Escape Adventures for a second, because I think that the industry as a whole has sort of given touring short shrift. You know, it is such a huge part of travel, bike touring. And so you've picked up on it. I would assume that your shops supply your bikes. Is that, would that be true?
Yep, that is true. It's so I'll kind of run through that with you.
Okay.
The bike touring business was something that was really new at the time in the late 80s and early 90s. But my focus was on mountain biking. So there was a few road bike operators out and about here and there, but the mountain bike world had not really been tapped much at all. So it was a different cup of tea, basically, because once you start going to national forests and on BLM lands, the second your tires start touching dirt instead of pavement, you run into a lot of political and governmental issues that you have to go. Basically, you have to conquer these issues. And I didn't realize that was what it was going to be when I got into it. And if I look back at it, I know what I know now, I'm not even sure I would have started again. But I got into it and it was exciting at the time, hard. But that's kind of what happened is I wanted to take people mountain biking. I figured I could take them and they would, you know, pay me as a guide to take them on something cool. So I loved innovating new routes, new destinations in Utah and Colorado, North Dakota, Arizona, Washington. I love to explore, but that required going out and scouting different areas, learning about routes, putting together itineraries that made sense. It was really exciting. And so that was the really fun part. But the hard part was once I figured out what I wanted to do, then I would have to approach the local governmental agency or agencies, especially when you're crossing over different agencies, forest lands, national park systems, state parks, state trust lands, et cetera. And I would have to apply for permits in each of these areas, and it became such a hassle. Now I have somebody doing it for me, but I still have to oversee it. But you know, we deal with probably more than 50 different governmental agencies. It's such a hassle.
Let me ask a question real quick about that. So when you get a permit from one of these agencies, are you able to reuse it, or is it every year you have to do the same damn thing over again?
You know what? Every year we literally do the same thing over and over again. And that's one of the things I've been trying to get the government on board with. And this is a systemic problem, even within the certain individual governmental agencies. Like, for example, the Forest Service, if you take, say, the Fish Lake National Forest and the Dixie National Forest in southern Utah, they're right next to each other. They're both federal agencies. They're both Department of Agriculture. But you have to apply for a permit in each of these different districts within the forest. So you've got different districts in the forest. And then within those, every year you have to reapply. Even if they write you a 10-year permit, you still have to supply them with a new operating plan, a new schedule. And it's the same thing every year, over and over. We send them literally the same emergency evacuation plans, et cetera. So I don't want this interview to go the wrong direction. I'm kind of getting sidetracked a little bit, but that's the frustrating part of our business.
It sounds like it.
yeah, it's really challenging. And I always like discourage anybody who wants to go out and start an adventure travel business that's going to be off the paved paths, because it is such a hassle. And most of the permits have already been gobbled up. So like for us now, we literally will have to buy another company if they're in an area that we want to do tours, unless it's an untapped area, which is not that much. It's kind of like, you know, what's an unoccupied piece of land on planet Earth? Nothing. Everything's been conquered.
Wow.
You know, so that's kind of how it is in the mountain bike world. But we've done a really good job, I think, over the past, this is our 30th year. You know, we've acquired many, many permits and worked with federal agencies, and we have a really good grasp on how it all works and how to deal with them. And we try and make the governmental process easier. But again, it's the government we're talking about, and it's almost impossible to get them to ever change. So that's the rough part of the business. However, the really fun part of the business is when we actually get to take our clients out on these great, awesome vacations that we put together. And our company started first with adventure travel. So Escape Adventures was basically stemmed off of my BMX trick bike riding. I wanted to do something different with mountain biking. And I thought, you know, here we go. We're going to start putting these trips together. And so we did. And then, of course, with that comes the marketing. And how do you tell everybody about your trips? And how do you get enough people on the trip to make it cost effective and justify your overheads and all these different costs? But it's a really challenging business. There could have been a lot of other routes. People always ask me, you know, why did you how was it hard? Was it easy? You know, it was really hard. Like there was many times that I thought I would just fall back on my business degree at UNLV. I mean, I got many job offers right out of college from my instructors. They said, you know, come work for us when you're done. But I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to go for it, and I did. And so we stemmed out, and we have destinations all over, well, around the world now, because we're into Europe and we're into doing stuff in Switzerland next year, but mostly the Southwestern United States, because that's where I live. So it's kind of in my backyard here.
All of this is just so entrepreneurial. I mean, you know, I can just hear it in your voice. I'm not working for the man. So you are the man, and you have people working for you. And one thing I saw on your website that I thought was so interesting is that you have your touring family, the people who are working with you now, your tour guides and whatever, but you also have pictures of people who have been past tour guides. It's like, yeah, you have this little family that's out there somewhere, probably good ambassadors for the business, yeah, and you know, who have gone on to do other things. But I just thought that was such a nice thing to do, that you would have their pictures.
Oh,
still
thank
on the
you.
Site.
You know, and that's, I really appreciate that. Part of my philosophy as a business owner and entrepreneur is I feel like you should always keep your relationships really good with your employees as they move on, because people do move on in life. We're not always, I mean, I probably won't always do this. I'll probably do something else in 20 years. I don't know. But I'd always want to keep those relationships strong through time and through our lives. And so that's why I have that on the website, because most of those past employees are some of my best friends. Even to this day, they've all gone on and started families. Some of them are still working for us. They want, you know, they want to live and die by this sword. And that's awesome, because that's the lifestyle they want. And others, you know, they change and want different things in life. But I always tell everybody, you know, never burn a bridge when you leave. Let's always have good relations and let's keep it up. I mean, we're in a really fun business. And that's one thing I really have enjoyed over all the years, is we created something where people are coming to us excited and they're happy and they call us on the phone with, you know, they're an adventure. And we're not like a call line for your computer that's broken down and we have to hear negative feedback all day. I didn't want to live that. So that's why I kind of created this business, because I knew it would be fun. You know, it definitely had its challenges and still does. But at the end of the day, like we're about having fun and enjoying life and enjoying the great outdoors. And one of the great things about even more for mountain biking, I mean, it's true for road biking too, but a little bit more, I think, in mountain biking is people come from these big, you know, corporate jobs, and they spend their week with us, and they plan their whole year around going on a trip with us. So we always want to make sure we make that the best week. And when they get out and they're overlooking the North Rim of the Grand Canyon, and they're looking off into the vast crevasse of the canyon, and they're watching ravens fly over the top, or maybe even, you know, some endangered species bird or squirrel, whatever's up on the North Rim. And they just look at how immense and enormous and beautiful the great outdoors is. They feel connected. It's a spiritual experience that people don't even realize that they're going to have out when they, and they receive it on these trips almost every time. And it is such a great moment. And that's a great moment for us as a company, as we get to share that with them. And that's why a lot of our tour clients too remain our greatest friends throughout life as well. And they come back year after year. And I mean, we've taken corporate executives from McDonald's and KFC, PepsiCo, Baker Concrete, Microsoft, most big corporations. They've come through, and we've been able to share experiences with these corporate executives. And then on the flip side, just, you know, non-corporate executives, just people who just want to go out and they just, they're living their lives. And maybe we even get some, you know, just recently graduated college students that want to go on an adventure, but it's the same experience. Like, they become very connected with this trip and the great outdoors. And it's just something that sticks with them, and it becomes part of their fiber and soul. I just came home to my house out here, and I saw a bike sitting on the side of my house, and I looked at it. I'm like, where did that bike come from? I'm like, oh, that was a guy last week. A guy came into our shop who's been a customer of ours for 25 years. He, every couple of years, he comes out and just rents a bike from us or does a multi-day, week-long trip. And this year I was like, you know what? Just come to my house. You can use my bike. It's an extra bike I had. Just take it out. You can have a whole week on it. And when you're done, I saw the bike sitting on the side of the house, and just kind of brought those memories back to, hey, this is a person that I did 25 years ago, was a new person, just came into my life as a new friend. And now we're lifelong friends. And I just let this guy, he's a customer, but I just let him use my bike now. And we share stories. And it's just really a great business to be in. And it's such a, there's so much synergy within this business, positive synergy, that, I mean, I can't even explain to you it's how awesome it's been over all the years. And it continues. I mean, we're going into year 30 now.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to speak with Jared Fisher some more. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
A bicycle crash is not an accident. And when you find yourself in a situation that calls for experienced, effective, and positive legal support and advocacy, you can depend on any of North America's independent bike law members. Bike Law's cycling attorneys are members of our community committed to the pursuit of cycling safety and justice. For more information about Bike Law, log on to bikelaw.com. They're on your left, protecting your rights. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. So, Jared, I want to ask you about this new Aquarius Trail, but I want to pick up on one thing before that. You're also in the retail bicycle business, and we've had that same experience because our retail store, which is no longer retail, it's strictly custom only, appointment only, has developed those same kinds of lifelong relationships. These people who love their riding and their bikes and their experiences just turned out to be you know, they're the same kind of people we are. So it's like, if you're getting into that part of the business, you know who we are. And so I just wonder where your bike shops are and what kind of bike shops they are.
Okay, well, we have three currently running. So we have a really big retail Net Zero Energy LEED Platinum, which we're really proud of, a building that we built in Summerlin, which is in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's our flagship store. That's been open for about 8 years. However, the store, it's the bike shop's called Las Vegas Cyclery. That's been, I think it's in its 25th year almost coming up. So that's been around quite a while, just in this new building. And then we've got another one in Las Vegas, a commuter store that we work with the local regional transportation commission. And so we're kind of a contractor for them. It's kind of a labor of love for us, but we're able to help out, you know, people who actually are using their bikes for actual commuting. And it's a different market for us, a different clientele from our other upscale store in the west side of Las Vegas. So we kind of work in two different markets there, and they're two different animals. And
oh, yeah.
Definitely, right? And then our third store is in the mountain bike capital of the world, which is Moab, Utah. And so that's Moab Cyclery there. And that's been around for, Moab Cyclery itself, we bought it 2001 from a nut wheel. We bought the company, a touring company, which owned Moab Cyclery. So we've owned Moab Cyclery for 20 plus years now, but it's been around for over 30 years. So it's a great shop right in the center of town. And that customer is even different than our other two shops. And that customer is a lot of the Denver Park City clientele who come down to Moab to explore. But I'll tell you what, a big chunk of our customers are Europeans who come
really?
Over from England. Mm-hmm. They come over from England, France, you name the Spain, all the European countries. I forget them all. There's so many because I've been through a bunch of them, but Austria, which is one of my favorite, but we get a lot of clientele from there. They hear about Moab, Utah, and they're like, I have got to go see this place, and blows their mind when they come out. So, you know, there it's, people can't wait 2 or 3 days for their bike to be repaired. It needs to be repaired 2 to 3 minutes.
Right.
So we literally, when people come in, because they've traveled halfway across the world to get to Moab, and if they'll break a derailleur off, our policy is to get them on the trail right away.
What have you done for parts during COVID here with the backlog?
So when COVID hits, I looked out my window and I saw a line the next morning all the way down our parking lot when they shut down our state, the state of Nevada, well, where I currently live. And when I saw that line, I quickly went to my computer. I started buying everything I could.
Oh, smart man.
I knew what was going to happen. And so I did the best I could. I bought bikes. We're a big specialized dealer. I bought everything I could possibly afford and get my hands on and leverage. And we literally sold through everything, just like every bike shop. And so now we'll do anything to get bike parts anywhere. Like I'll even go off of Amazon and buy them for our customers. That's our policy. Like we got to do what we have to do to get them on the trail. Because I mean, you're probably like me, like if I want to go for a bike ride, I want to go for a bike ride right now, not tomorrow or the next week or in 3 weeks. So, yeah. So that's kind of how we've dealt with COVID, which has been challenging. It'll go away eventually.
Hopefully the supply chain logjam will eventually break loose. We hope so.
Yeah.
So let's talk a minute about your new Aquarius trail.
Okay.
It's hut to hut.
It's hut to hut. So this kind of goes back 30 years. So one of my favorite areas is Southern Utah, where we first started doing our multi-day mountain biking tours. And one of our very first tours was called Brian and the Bullfrog. We went from Brian Head, Utah to Bullfrog Marina on Lake Powell. It was basically a 250-mile route through Southern Utah. And the scenery is just fantastic. It's just amazing. And I always thought throughout the years, wouldn't it be nice if there was huts along this route? And I always dreamed of it. It was a dream in the back of my mind. And of course, you know, dreams aren't always free. Sometimes they cost a lot of money. So
like most of them.
Yeah. Right. So over the years, I saved my dollars and kind of kept it in the back of my mind. And then about 5-6 years ago at this point, I decided that I had to get this done before I expire or company expires or something. I felt like this time constraint, like I really need to do this. Mm-hmm. So I started the process with the Forest Service. I had already built up years and years with a good repertoire with the Dixie National Forest in Southern Utah. We got to be friends and so forth. So when I presented them my plan, which was to build 5 huts across a 190-mile route, they were pretty open to it as long as I had the backing of the local communities along the route. And so I went to the meetings for the tourism board, and those meetings have a lot of players at the table, players from like local businesses, different tourism boards, state park affiliations and so forth. So I was able to get all the ringmen in one spot. And I presented it to them and they liked it. And so I thought, okay, that's the first step. So I started working on the project. I did it really organically. The first year I thought, okay, what am I going to use for this if this actually flies? And we hadn't had the approval yet. We just had the excitement saying, yeah, this would be a good idea, but I knew there was years ahead. So I just worked with the Forest Service for years on trying to get the process going, the public comment. Of course, it needs to be presented to the different communities, the people. Do you want this? Do you not want this? I mean, the first blessing you have to have is you got to have the big players at the table saying, yeah, this is a good idea before you even start wasting your money and time beyond that. So I just made sure that those were organically moving along. And along the way, I wanted the Forest Service to know that I was really serious about it, because a lot of people do come to the table and they may not have the finances to do things and get them done. So I actually bought some land in Utah, 2 acres along the route. And I figured out what I wanted to use for a hut. So I wanted to use recycled shipping containers, and I wanted to make them off-grid, and I wanted to be fully sustainable within themselves. I didn't want them to damage the land. And I thought that would be a good way about it. And so I built one on my property out there, and I strategically bought the property right along the route so we could actually have this as one of the locations. And I kind of think it was kind of one of those, like the Forest Service could now come out and see one of these huts, and now they knew how serious I was about it. And so now it wasn't just some like idea, it was actually hitting the ground running. So when they saw the first hut, I was able to get feedback from the government, from the representatives of the Forest Service to, we need to be ADA compatible, even though it's mountain biking, we make sure to get wheelchairs in there, like things I didn't think about. And we made all these little changes while we were going through this process. And so as we did that, we were kept updating the Forest Service about it. And so they knew we were serious. And so they really helped us push this through. And then when COVID hit, I approached the Forest Service and I said, hey, look, the retail world's going great in bicycling, but people want to go outside and ride their bikes, but they can't go on these guided tours right now because the national parks and national whatevers
right.
have said no tour company, no tour operations, et cetera. So our tour operations are basically dive bombed, and people were afraid to travel on, commercial airlines, but they weren't afraid to travel with their families in their little minivans. So that excitement, along with the fact that we weren't doing as many tours during COVID, gave me the opportunity to build these huts, because I kind of had some downtime during the middle of the summer where we'd normally be busy. So we started utilizing our tour guides and employees to build these huts with us. So we went out and we built 5 huts in about 3 months. It was absolutely amazing, phenomenal to watch this whole process happen. My general manager was basically the brains behind getting all of the employees out there, getting them working, traveling, with these shipping containers through the mountains and then putting them together like Legos. It was quite the process, but we literally got that entire system on the ground by the end of August. We started in June or late May and got them everything built up with roofs, decks, solar, fridges, beds, drywalled out, electricity, bathrooms, storage units, walkways, everything, ADA ramps. I mean, we did everything in the middle of these mountains where and this is all off grid. Like we're talking everything. We brought everything in. Like it would be like a helicopter going to the top of a mountain, putting a hut up there. I mean, that's literally what we were doing, except that we did have access roads. And so we put the whole system in. We started running a few tours in September, some FAM tours, which are familiarization tours, which essentially we bring out travel writers and so forth to experience it and then write about it so that we get the word out. And that's what we did. We did that in September of last year. And then we literally almost fully booked out August, September, and even October of this year. Like every day we have a departure of like 12 people along the hut system. So, I mean, we at any given time, we have about 60 people on the ground through the mountains utilizing this hut system. That's the first year. And I mean, we're already booking heavily right now for next year. Like, I would suggesting anybody who wants to go on the hut system next year, they have to book, they better hurry and book in the next like 8 weeks, 12 weeks, because we won't have any more dates for the most popular times, which are August, September, first week of October.
So you need more huts?
Yeah. I don't know. That's such a long process.
No kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Well, the last thing I want to talk about is something that has nothing to do with bicycles at all. You ran for governor.
Yes, I did. It was a fantastic experience.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. And your experience, your platform was a healthy Nevada, which is sort of an oxymoron if you think of Las Vegas.
I know, right?
Tell me about your experience running for governor of a state. Now, wow.
Okay. Well, I've been kind of one of those people like to connect with people over the years. And so since my college graduation in 94, moving to Vegas in 90, I've always stayed in touch with people and players and any executives I can. I've always listened to people and utilizes other people's information. Try not to reinvent the wheel until I want a new wheel, and then I'll make my own. But my connections started, you know, they were pretty good. And we started some, my wife started a nonprofit here in Nevada that took off really well with 50,000 members and did really, really well. And so it got to a point where I just was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? So I've got these businesses going. I'm based in Nevada, even though I've ventured out in these other states. I've worked with government so much. I understand what's going on there. Like, maybe I can make a difference. So I started looking at all the different ways that I can make a difference. And like just being an executive of a company, that's pretty much like I'm a decision maker. And I like to bring wisdom to the table based on experience. And that's certainly governorship is essentially that. And that's where I went. So I went as governor. We had a whole, you know, had our own team together, and we worked for about 2 years on the campaign. And I wasn't totally sure I'd win or lose or what. I figured I probably wouldn't make it the first round, and that was okay because I really wanted the experience as well. And I, well, of course, I'm not governor right now, so of course I didn't get elected for governor. But
which cycle was that? Which year?
It was 2018. But I also needed that time to meet more people within the political world too. That some people that I had not thought of that I ended up meeting that were key people too. So, and it's all about working the system and getting to know people. You know, the whole political process. It's goofy how who gets elected nowadays. But
yeah, you think?
But yeah, but it's not the end of my political career. I do have ambitions to go for it again, and I do get asked all the time when I'm going to run for governor again. And I tell people once I. What I have to get through these businesses that I'm creating and doing. I mean, I've got two more bike shops in the mix right now too that we didn't even talk about in these key areas in Nevada and in Utah. And I still want to do those, and I want to be sure I get those on the ground running before I put all my efforts back into a campaign again. But running a political campaign it's a lot of work. And I mean, it's every day suit and tie, traveling on the plane, meeting people, you know, the smiley face all the time, and
kissing babies.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, kissing babies. I didn't kiss too many babies.
it was COVID. No, after them was pre-COVID.
Well, it was pre-COVID, but yeah. But during all this too, like, I'm also an adventure cyclist too. And I don't want to, you know, I told everybody, I said, look, I'm going running or biking every day. I don't care what it is, wherever I travel in this campaign, I'm waking up, I'm going running, I'm going riding. And I made sure I did that every single day on my campaign for those 2 years. I did it, and I was running half marathons before meetings. And because I mean, I've done a bunch of Ironmans too. I've ridden across the country 3 times in the past 2 years. I just love adventure travel, bike packing, anything that challenges the human body. I think it's fascinating.
Don't you think that the voting public, as it gets younger and younger, is going to look more toward people like you to be an elected official? At least one can only hope, right?
I am 51 years old, so like, I'm not super young, but I do connect with a lot of young people. Like, I can ride with the young kids. I can keep up and
look what you do.
So we get along really well. So, and I listen to them. Like, I'm a listener. I like to listen to what people have to say. And then I like to give them my feedback and listen to their feedback and work together with people. So that's the kind of person I am. I think the voting public is, more and more people are starting to be politically involved nowadays. And so that's kind of why I didn't run this cycle, was I wanted to get a better base for my campaign. So I'm kind of working. I wanted an 8-year gap before I do it again. So I've got 5 more years.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my question. Are you going to pick up the 22 cycle? But I guess not.
No, I'm probably not going to do 22. I've had a lot of people ask me, but I'm definitely not running for governor 22. Like, I'll probably save that for 26. So I might do something a little bit in the meantime, something else, but I'm going to be focusing on business. And I think that people want, they want somebody who is, who's rolled up their sleeves. They've got their hands dirty, but they are savvy in the political field too. Like, they just don't want somebody who's just a career politician, and that's not me. So I think more and more people are seeing that. And I think another 4 years will help. Like, I'm a true believer in organic growth. I think organic growth is healthy, and it shows that you've done your due diligence in business or in politics. Now, if you've spent the time and you've worked slowly and gone through all the different routes and like made the mistakes, I think people want somebody who has that wisdom. And I want to be, you know, somebody people can trust and who has been there and done that. So I'm going to wait another 4 or 5 years before I go at it again. So,
well, this has been such a fascinating conversation. So we have been speaking with Jared Fisher. He is the owner of Escape Adventures. He's the owner of a bunch of bike shops and the Aquarius Hut to Hut. If you want to do one of these huts, you better get on the website and check it out. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I will keep up with what you're doing, and I hope
Absolutely.
You run for office. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. It's been great. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. You take care.
All right. Okay.
My thanks to Jared for joining me on the show this week. I told you it was going to be a good conversation. If you are interested in reserving one of the huts on the Aquarius Trail, you can log on to aquariustrail.com. And for more information about Escape Adventures, yep, you got it, escapeadventures.com. To learn more about the man himself, as well as his wife, Heather, you can go to escapeadventures.com/contact us and scroll down. Before we go, though, I'd like to read you a short piece about the state of Texas versus Victor Kevin Tome. It's a win for bicyclists out of a horrible situation resulting in unbearable loss. On Monday, June 21st, 2021, trial began for the state of Texas versus Victor Kevin Tome. Tome was charged with capital murder, 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, accident involving serious bodily injury, and 2 counts of accident involving death. The charges stem from the events of March 25, 2017, when Tome drove his vehicle into a group of cyclists, killing 2 of them. Witnesses testified that Tome was driving toward several bicyclists training in Waller County on Buller Road. Tome struck five innocent victims while purposely maneuvering his car towards them. He killed Craig Tippett and Carrie Gillory. Tome fled the scene and hid in a local house until his arrest later that afternoon. Tome pled not guilty by reason of insanity. A military psychiatrist, Michael Arambula, testified for the prosecution against three defense experts on the issue of insanity. Arambula found that the defendant suffered from psychosis due to extensive abuse of ecstasy, marijuana, and alcohol. The jury took a little over an hour to convict Tome on all counts. On the charge of capital murder, Tome was sentenced to life in prison without parole by the court. The state was represented by prosecutors Sean Whitmore and Warren Deepram. The Honorable Albert M. McCaig, Jr. presided over the trial. District Attorney Elton Mathis would like to thank the jurors for their diligent service, as well as the court staff and law enforcement officers who assisted with the investigation and trial. Mathis stated, quote, "Waller County is a peaceful, rural county, and people committing crimes of this nature will be held accountable by the citizens. We hope this conviction will help the families of the victims in some small way. The pain that they have suffered is unimaginable. Tome will never be eligible for parole." So while we may claim some victory for the 2017 crash, we are still watching the most recent multiple-victim crash investigation that incurred in the same Texas county, injuring six riders. This time, a teenage driver decided to call roll the cyclists before running into them. So I'd like to ask you to go to our sponsor's website, bikelaw.com, and click on the blog at the top of the page. Read the entry titled, quote, "Coal Rolling Texas Driver Plows into Six Cyclists," end quote. Because in addition to explaining what is happening in the case, Rachel and Peter also explain some very important elements of the crash and what you can do to protect yourself if you ever find yourself in a similar situation. It's a must-read for all of us. So while this might not be the most pleasant way to end our show, I'd still like to thank you for listening and hope you enjoyed it. Our guests next week are Steve Maxwell and Spencer Martin from The Outer Line. They're going to wrap up the 2021 season as we look forward to 2022. We'll also talk with Brett Horton of the Horton Collection as we begin to look at holiday gift possibilities. He's got some great ideas for us. Remember, you can always join the ongoing conversations on our Facebook page and log on to our website, OutspokenCyclist.com, for a weekly synopsis of the show, including notes, photos, and links. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, stay well, and remember, there is always time for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We welcome your thoughts and contributions on our Facebook page, or visit OutspokenCyclist.com to leave a comment on any episode. We will be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app and you'll never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.